Well, that's my girl, Ernestine Anderson. I just love her voice. And if you're ever feeling a little low, put on some Ernestine Anderson and instant cure. You're back to your good old self. It's a wonderful voice that she has, and I'm thankful that she has shared it with us these many years. This is Lead Stories. I'm your Cherise Lead, and we continue from where we left off with each other just yesterday. I was asking questions, and let me tell you were giving me the answers. You were giving us all the answers. And it was a wonderful session. And I'm hoping that we could ask a few more questions today and see what we get. The idea is that you should change your way of thinking about yourself as a repository of information. And you have to work at it. You have to build your own library. You have to follow the news. You've got to do some independent thinking and inquiry yourself. You have to subject things to questioning, your own questioning in your own mind. It doesn't matter whether people agree with you or don't agree with you. What matters is that you develop the discipline, a discipline of thinking, which is informed, hopefully, by your accumulation of knowledge, your examination of different sources of information, and you test yourself by asking yourself internally, well, after all of this, what are my thoughts on this subject? What do I believe? What do I think? And that is the important part, because as we saw yesterday and heard yesterday, when people begin to do that, you can tell instantly whether they're wired into the now, into what's happening, whether they have a perspective that comes from inquiry. Again, it is not important whether you agree or disagree. It is good to know whether you agree or disagree, but it is not the point to pursue agreement with the person. It is a point, the point is to appreciate the arguments being made, the information being shared, whether it amplifies what you think, whether it adds to a body of information you already have, whether it brings to light for you new ways of thinking about a subject you thought, well, I'm finished with that. I've done enough research. I'm satisfied with where I am on this subject. And that is the important part. That is the important thing. To be open to different ways of thinking, different attitudes toward life and toward most everything else. And reserving the right, just the same, to come to your own conclusions, but happy to entertain new ideas. That makes you a valuable, a more valuable, I should say, member of our community. Because you are functioning as a truly intelligent person. And you are likely to be the source of a great deal of learning for us. And so we cannot just move toward unanimity of agreement and that is the purpose to think alike so that we can act alike. No. We don't want people thinking alike. We want people thinking. We want you thinking. And that includes the possibility that what you're thinking may not be what most people are thinking. And that's the excitement of information and knowledge being shared. Again, I stress, it is not important. It really isn't important in the scheme of things that you agree or do you disagree with any point of view. It is important that you appreciate it and you are able to react to it, that is to decide whether you want to receive it or you would rather just put it on the side for a moment because you have another way to go. You have a further way to go to inspect the elements of it before you incorporate it as part of your working library. That's the excitement I get when I talk to people. You'd be amazed. When you listen and you're prepared to listen to what they say, you'd be amazed at the education you get. And not just about any particular subject, but about yourself and what you are thinking. Because in our society, what we think is who we are, except we don't even know what we're thinking. We fool ourselves into thinking that we know what we're thinking. But we don't really expose ourselves to other ways of thinking, other opinions. As I said, even if you think you disagree, listen to the argument made. And you will find value in the argument and even greater value in giving yourself to listening to what is being said. All right, so what kinds of questions am I posing to you today? Pretty much on the same plane as the questions posed to you yesterday. And the reason I'm asking these questions is because we get to deal with them as news stories. We get to treat them as news because that's what the media does. They treat these things as news, but is it really news? Like a young guy who wraps a Mexican flag around his shoulders at his graduation, and it's a big news story. Is it? Is it a big news story? And even so, they missed the point. They missed the point altogether. The coverage is so way off. They have us thinking like people who need to be told what the story is. And still they didn't do it. The story still has not been told there because it is not of interest to really tell that story. So the story comes to a point where we are accustomed to meeting stories like that. Here's a Mexican guy, proud of Mexico. He's just graduated from high school, and he's all about celebrating as a Mexican with his American high school diploma. And that's as far as they could go. Of course, there is a very deep story there, but nobody wants to tell it. And nobody's prepared to tell it. So they reduce it to its lowest common denominator. And they tell you what the story is. And the story is about this guy being proud to be Mexican and proud to be having his American high school diploma. And so proud that he clothes himself with the Mexican flag over his high school gown, if you will, and it causes a ruckus for the administration of the school and blah, 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 blah. The story, by the way, is not being told. The story they prefer to tell us is that that is the story. The big story continues to elude a supposedly sophisticated media. And so we are dumbed down, and this happens all the time in all these various categories of, quote, news coverage, where things are brought to the very lowest common denominator because the assumption is your brain can't handle more than that. You're not built for thinking. You can't think. And so everything is brought to the lowest common denominator. And that's news. Okay, so some questions. These are questions that were part of the original set of questions, but nobody tackled them. But I'll read them again. If you feel you have a response that you would like to offer, please do call. The number is 888-874-4888. Okay, we start off. Will current social, political, and economic conditions encourage or discourage the formation of new or newer movements and social systems? Okay, I heard you. I'll repeat it. Will current social, political, and economic conditions encourage or discourage the formation of new or newer movements and social systems? What do you see as the greatest threats or impediments to American democracy? Okay, that's a big one. What, in your view, is the purpose of a government? We talk most often about what the government is not doing, but what is the government supposed to be doing? Is democracy as we know it sustainable? Have we outgrown it, or has it outgrown us? Oh, Lord, I'm hearing all that groaning going on, which means I'm hitting the right spot. Are lawmakers really interested in the people's views and opinions on legislative matters? How do you know? And the final question that we still haven't gotten to, have you ever switched political parties or refused to openly identify with a party? And why? All right. So those are the questions that we can deal with today. You can have your pick, and you can wax as philosophical as you want, and we'll see where you go with it. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's see who's brave enough to start us off. Well, look, looky, looky. It's Ed from Queens. Hello, Ed.
Hey, Trees, how are you?
Okay, so you're starting us off today. What question are you tackling?
Well, I can tackle all of them if that's acceptable.
No, you want to take one. You want to be generous. Let other people have some.
Okay, well, the first one, you basically stated what the prevailing, I know I'm paraphrasing, was the prevailing political and economic social climate foster, will it foster new movements or new means of governance, new social mechanisms? I believe, yes, it will. I mean, I believe the people have reached a certain amount of dissatisfaction with things as they are. We're constantly being faced with this government full of lies and mistruths and misrepresentations. Even the current administration made a lot of promises, the $15 minimum wage, the affordable health care, immigrant status, and it seems to me that they're reneging. They're not even trying to present a fight, and they have the majority. And if they don't do it now, then they're going to lose the majority, and we're going to be in that spiral again of possible Trump presidency, possible excessive right wing off the wall people taking charge, taking control. They're not using the moment. They're not seizing the moment. And I don't believe they have the intestinal fortitude to do it. And I think people are
But
getting fed
you
up with
do
that.
know, of course, that Biden is just barely in office.
Well, it has nothing to do with his time in office. He we gotta look at it this way. He didn't have a large mandate. This was a strategic win. It was a win basically to get rid of what I believe to be an insane individual and a thoroughly corrupt administration, and replace it with something. A lot of people, myself included, would anything just to get away from that. And we were in the midst of a pandemic. There was a lot of stress. There was a lot of fear. And the Democratic Party was the evil of two lessers. So if he can't take that opportunity and, quote, put himself in an FDR frame of mind, even though the forces that compelled FDR to do what he did are not prevalent or as prevalent as they were back in the 1930s, 1940s. I mean, I don't see any change. Right now, I mean, even the Justice Democrats, the Black Congressional Caucus, they're empty people. They're just wearing kente cloth and kneeling and all this other garbage. The police are still in control. We haven't really considered defunding the police. We haven't made any adjustments as far as student loans. We haven't made any adjustments as far as housing debt. Or the prevailing economic, yeah, the economy is on the rise now because we're coming out of COVID and people are spend, spend, spend. Let's go, let's go, let's go. But that's a bubble that's bound to burst, and we've seen it happen time and time again. They're not addressing real issues with real solutions. They're giving you smoke and mirrors again, and I think people are getting fed up with that. And hopefully, that'll foster the change that needs to be done.
So you take back any hint at all of giving Biden a break because he's the new guy on the job and he needs some time to get himself together.
He doesn't deserve a break. I don't elect a politician to give you a break. I elect a politician to represent my interests and to handle the problems that are in my immediate life and in their frame of governance. I didn't give you a break. You want a break? Go get a job and take a vacation. You want to service the people? Be ready. I ain't giving you a break. I don't give you a break for it. Nobody gives me a break. I ain't giving you a break.
Nobody
You
gives
put
you a break,
yourself in this.
so nobody gets a break. All right.
No,
Well,
nobody
thank
gives a
you.
break.
A very good analysis, I think, and you stated your point and you backed it up very well. I think you make a very credible argument. You shot down my argument that, well, look, the guy just showed up for the job a couple of months ago, and he needs some time. That you just shut that down. So that's good. But you make your strong points, and I hope people appreciate that. And they heard you, because there was a lot there to appreciate and to think about. Thank you. 888-874-4888. We have several questions still around for you to answer. If you're brave enough to take one of them on and really analyze and put your perspective out there to see whether people agree with you or not. And again, that's not the aim here, to see whether people agree with you or not. The aim is to see how strong a case you make to support your own position. All right? That's the main task. How do you support your own position and do so credibly enough to cause us to rethink perhaps what we have been holding on to as an opinion about something? And then we hear you and we say, well, you know, that made sense. I better take a look at that. I better reinvestigate and see whether I still hold to my previous opinions. 888-874-4888. This is where we teach each other. This is great. And we'll see who's up next. It's Marcus from Wisconsin. Hello, Marcus. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much, Utrice. Excellent discussion. I couldn't help but believe that the questions were a kind of bait. The biggest threat to democracy, I have always felt, is the rather childish belief that we have one. You know, if people go around believing in a democracy that doesn't exist, it excuses them from the work of actually building one. So the purpose of all governments is to oppress people and to protect the interests of capital. Now, you can dress it up in all kinds of different forms, but the purpose is to protect the elites. I mean, in the American case, it's actually stated that way in the Federalist Papers and in the Constitution. The purpose is to protect, as Madison said, the opulent minority from the bewildered herd. So this idea that we have a democracy... actually, it was the trampling.
I'm trying to reconfigure my own perception of myself as a member of the bewildered herd.
Actually, he said it was to protect the opulent minority from the trampling of the bewildered herd. Yeah, because that's what we'll do. See, if you give us any power or the levers of anything, we'll just trample around and stampede and wreck everything the rich want. See, well, that's why they have to be so careful to make sure that no political party is ever going to do anything like give power to actual people. For instance, you were recently having a discussion about you know, the fact that we spend all our time, you know, mourning about Tulsa, which is safely 100 years in the past. And, you know, nobody talks about the equivalent riot in East St. Louis in 1917. And there were plenty of others. But so we'll take this safe stance where we have really kind of obnoxious pity for distant victims and the persecuted, but we don't identify with an actual anti-imperialist struggle that causes these things. We don't direct our energies actually against the police or the state and corporate security services or the multinational corporations or U.S. imperialism. So, I mean, that we won't do. That's cost and risk. We'd rather gab and be sympathetic. So the purpose of government is to oppress. We don't have a democracy. So the purpose of politicians is to craft policy that will carry out the ends that serve the elites and protect capital. And what political party can we come up with that will compete in this rotten system? Well, all you have to do is look at the history. The two-party system has understood for a couple of hundred years how you deal with third parties. You let them get started and articulate what they want, and then one party or the other steps in and says, look, we're completely down with what you're trying to accomplish. Of course, we want to assist you. But look, we have all this money and all these resources and all these connections. Let us fight the battle for you. And so the progressives in the 20s disappear. The populist movement in the 1890s disappears. This is how they do it. So we can't see the society clearly that we actually live in. We can't see that our schools chew up your children and spit out a labor force, that the universities chew up your students and spit out robots who go to the office, and that chews up employees and spits out bosses. And the retail counter that chews up people and spits out profits. Don't pay any attention to that. Obsess about the system, the political system that completely distracts you from the reality of your life. Democracy. Do you experience democracy on your job? Do you have a vote? No, you follow the orders or you're out. It's a fascist command structure. So any discussion of democracy, even rhetorically, to me, is absurd. The problem is us.
All right. Well, that's a mouthful. And lots to think about. And a comprehensive, by the way, a comprehensive treatise on the subject, which I think should give people pause and to rethink what you have said and reevaluate the validity of what you have said as well. Thank you so much, Marcus, for your call today. Ali
Thank
from
you,
New
you
York,
too.
You're on the air.
Doing?
Hello, Ali, how are you?
I'm doing well, how about you?
I'm hanging in.
Okay, like everybody else. And I just wanted to say,
we're all hanging in.
Yes, yes, and hello to all your audience there. I wanted to tackle the first question because I have been thinking about what is going on in Peru right now with that election. And you're talking about democracy and democracy in this country. The first thing that I'm going to say is there is no such thing in this country as the word democracy. I wish you know it. You can't have democracy with just two parties. And let's just face it, forget about the Green Party and all the parties out there. There is no such thing as democracy with just two parties. And one of the things that it dawned on me is when you said, you mentioned the new movement. Can there be created a new movement? How about if we said, can we create new parties? Because if we create new parties, it's what happened around the world, including in Peru, where you have so many parties and they form coalition, good or bad, but you need people to work together in different parties. Look what happened here. We have this group called the DSA, and I think they start for Democratic Socialists of America. And yes, that is a branch of the Democratic Party. Then we also have the Tea Party, a branch of the Republican Party. We don't have democracy because we can't not choose. And the fact is that in this city, the Democratic machine gives your people to vote for them. And you know how that goes. And we need party, I like it, I said, to form coalition. It's like David always says. It's the same party. It's the same party. Look what is happening right now. The Biden administration, the DOJ, the Department of Justice, is defending Trump from one of those allegations that he raped somebody in the 90s. And they're defending him, the Biden administration, the DOJ, because they said that when that woman brought her case, he was president of the United States. How can that be? So it's just one party. And then when you talk about, you didn't say, how about creating new parties? You say movement, because everything in this country is about the creation of movement. And then we look at all the country, like Peru. Look what's happening with this man. Look at the right. Even if they didn't like each other, all the right have gone to Fujimori, and they have created a coalition to fight Pedro Castillo's group, the Peru Libre. So this is what we need in this country. As long as we only have two parties, which is the same party, and the demonstration is about the Biden administration defending Trump from the 1990 assumable rape. It's the same party. So there is no democracy. Where is the democracy? That is what I have to say about that question for today.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Ali, for your contribution today. Thank you. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air. What is your question that you're tackling today?
Hey, Trace, how's it going?
Oh, it's all right. I'm hanging in.
Same here. Well, I wanted to tackle the question that the previous callers have tackled on, and that's the issue of democracy. But in particularly, the one question that you asked, what is the greatest threat to democracy? Now, obviously, as some of the previous callers, as Ali and Marcus have stated, that, you know, democracy has been trashed in this country. But I think what has been the main point or the main issue or the main problem that has kept us from being a democracy is capitalism. And capitalism is the antithesis of, you know, for me, it's the antithesis of democracy, because they give you this illusion that, you know, we are all on equal footing, which is supposed to be the, you know, the essence of democracy. But obviously we're not. And capitalism brings that out, you know, so much. Because if you look at modern elections now, I know here in Chicago, you know, to run for just an aldermanic race, you need $1 million. So how does somebody run for an aldermanic spot in Chicago and you need $1 million to run? So that cancels out a lot of people, unless you're getting the backing of some companies, corporations, and possibly some churches who have a lot of money. But then at that point, you have to do their bidding and not the bidding of the people who actually vote for you. So capitalism has become a big problem, and it probably is the political system that we live in instead of a democracy.
So are you suggesting that a solution is to bring an end to capitalism?
If it has to come to that, yes, because if you look at the history of this country, from its inception, capitalism has become the major political engine. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember learning this in history where, in the first presidential election or, the elections that started when this country started, only landowners can vote. I mean, if I'm wrong, please correct me on that. But
that's correct.
Yeah. So that was, that to me is more capitalist than democratic than anything. So, if it has to be, replaced, then by all means we do. But what do we replace it with? That's the question that I ask myself. What do we replace it with?
So I'm going to ask you exactly the same question. What do you replace capitalism with?
Oh, man. All right. So
you walked into that one.
Yeah. Okay. I would, the thing is that you would have to go with a structure of socialism. If that's the case. And what I mean by that is socialism probably resembles more of a democracy than what we have right now. And I feel like if that's where we have to start, then yes, I would basically replace this system with a more socialistic structure.
All right. Duck. That's all I have to say to you.
All righty.
Duck. No, but your point is well made. And it should be seriously considered. Thank you so much for contributing. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to head for that first part of the series of questions. And what's in my mind at this point is what I think is the reality that any entity that runs a capitalist and an imperialist system that we have here in the United States is not going to change peacefully to something that benefits the masses of people. To me, that's impossibility. The most we can get as it is now is the threat of a rebellion. And the ruling class has worked it out very well. When there's any kind of threat for a rebellion of the masses of people, to come up with the bones to throw to them. It's less like the training of the animals and the old circus, Barnum and Bailey. You train those animals, those man-eating tigers, you put them in a cage and you can do things with them. So if there's any threat of changing the status quo that we have, where the small ruling class rules and gets richer and richer, and the rest of the people scuffle, that is when they throw out the bones. Now, they will throw out the bones as long as necessary and as long as they feel they have to. They threw out the bones with Social Security. They threw out the bones with unemployment insurance. They threw out the bones with certain things like Medicare. And as all these bones are thrown out, what they do as they calm down the people they slowly take these bones back. So the point is that you can never expect a ruling class like we have here to just decide they're going to do the right thing. Now, the talk has been that, you know, Trump was a big liar and whatnot. But as far as I'm concerned, most of them are liars. It's not exclusive to Trump. So the point is, rebellion is what they're afraid of, and they have a formula for that. As soon as that looks like it's going to happen, the bones will come back, and when it dies down a little, the bones will be collected.
Still, do you see the situation coming to the point of rebellion?
That is a possibility. I think that could happen. But Biden, who is a part of the ruling class apparatus, I think he's got his pulse on things. And he will probably toss out a few bones, and he's got most of the people forgetting who he really is, and he's an agent of those who rule, not for the people. And, you know, this idea of he's, you know, better than Trump and all that, but, you know, he's on the wrong side of the people, and I'm on the people's side. So he may do a few things, but he'll throw out as few bones as possible. He's not going to throw out a lot. He's not going to give you really what the people need, and he'll make some excuse about it and say it's the Republicans or something. But the point is, he'll throw out something to kind of quiet down the people. And if the people go for it, then he'll laugh all the way to the bank with his friends. But if not, that means he'll have to go to the formula again, is when the people look like they're going to rebel, you throw out some more bones. And that's the way Brother David sees it.
Thank you very much for your analysis today. Thank you so much. 888-874-4888. We go next to Brooklyn. Willie, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, beloved.
Good afternoon, Willie.
How are we doing?
Okay. So what question are you dealing with today?
Oh, well, the question of democracy. We've never had that. I mean, I remember about 30 years ago, you went through that yourself.
So, you'll have to talk into your phone because we're getting lot of reverb and it's clouding the clarity of what it is you're saying.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now better now?
Much better.
Okay. Yeah, I remember about 30 years ago, you did a program on this same map. And you said that you didn't vote. And it took me about 20 years after to realize this thing is hypocrisy. It's a lie. You know.
Okay, but what exactly is the threat, the biggest threat to democracy? That was the question.
Okay. The greatest threat to what we call democracy or any nation, particularly this one, is truth. Because we're listening to this station, because we get the truth from this station, and we dismiss so-called mainstream media, because I personally pay no attention to it. It annoys me, and I find it offensive, because you know over many years of you know, used to get some information from them. And as time goes
I don't know what it is, but there's a lot of feedback on your phone, and we could hardly really hear you as clearly as we need to.
Is that better?
Whatever it is that you doing, are you speaking directly into the phone?
Yes. I'm on a plantation, maybe that's why.
Oh. That would explain it. Okay.
Yes. So, you know, the greatest threat to this nation or any nation is truth, because all of what we've seen people are doing, they don't know the truth. Because the incident in Washington, if those people mean the truth, they wouldn't be behaving the way they do.
In a way, it's an esoteric argument that you're raising. You're saying that because truth means different things to different people. So we can't just say that the greatest threat is truth, because that could go 5 million different ways in how people choose to interpret that word, truth. What is truth? Is there a way that you could make it really clear for us?
The historical truth, because we've been here in this nation for over 40 years, and we've went from party to party, and our situation is still the same. And we say we have the mask, and we look forward to having for them making political changes to make our lives better. That's not going to happen. Because, you know, just like every other group, we have, particular black people, we have to learn to do for ourselves. It's as simple as that.
That doesn't answer the question. It doesn't answer the question. The question is, what is the biggest threat? That you just identified the lack of truth. There's no truth. And so that is the biggest threat to democracy. Now you need to bring it down to a more finite point and tell us, how would such a thing work? How would it express itself?
Just like Henry said, if we begin to deal with truth and understand that we have to help ourselves and do things for ourselves, not looking for the government to do anything for us, but we have to do things for ourselves and begin to work together to do these things.
But then people would say, the purpose of government, since you and I and everybody else, we're required to pay taxes to fund the services that we need, we therefore are entitled to such services. So if we do pay the taxes and then do the work for ourselves, we have a question to answer. What is the point?
Considering this government, the purpose of the government, in my job, from what I know and understand, is the distribution of goods and services. Now, we cannot look from the historical perspective. We cannot look to particular this government for any service from them. I don't think.
We'll have to leave it there because we can't hear you very well. So you'll have to figure out a way to make your call perhaps in a different location where there isn't all this interference and the drowning out of your sound itself, your voice. We can't hear you very clearly.
My apologies on that.
No problem. That's not a problem. But it is important for you to know, because we welcome your voice and participation in the program. Thanks a lot. We have one more call, G from New York. You're on the air.
Okay, Utrice, how you doing? Hope everything is well. Beautiful day in New York. Hope it's good where you are. Okay, you asked about what's a threat to democracy. I agree with all your students, all your top A game students, you know, Brother Ed, Brother David, Sister Ali, and the professor sounding man, Marcus.
All yes.
I would just add to them that there is a bedtime relationship. I don't think anyone mentioned, but I'm just adding the bed relationship between government and corporations, you know, where these people, top shelf people in corporations, can go into government and help enact policies that is beneficial to corporations, you know, and sometimes they hide things, I guess the word sometimes is in quotes, because it's more often than not, but they hide things from the public. I understand there was a Michael Taylor in the, I believe it's the FDA, that had been corporate previous. And I don't mean low-level corporate. I mean big-level corporate. You have Clarence Thomas, who's big-level corporate, and then he's he's still a Supreme Court judge. And these people get to enact policies. They get to support and follow up policies that give corporations benefit. We all hear about the Citizens United and how the corporation is regarded as a person. And so there's certain rights that a person have that you can't trounce upon. Meanwhile, you know, what about our rights? What about our tax situation? What about getting the benefits of the public that we need? And I believe this is the crux of all the questions that you're asking us about. You know, you want us to deal with how we are doing in this country. And when you have corporations that are doing things with the government, and I guess you could even say with the COVID situation, where the question has to be asked again or reviewed whether we got all the safety reviews that we were supposed to before the product was put out. But see, there's government and corporation relationship, especially when you look at the fact that Pfizer has been indicted and had to pay out. These companies have had payout. But yet there's that government and corporation relationship that allows them to do what they do. And this isn't democracy because it does not show any representative input from any sector of the public. So I would say, and I don't think I've covered this exhaustively, but I hope I've covered it well enough to just say that there's too much of a relationship between corporations and government. And that excludes democracy because the public cannot participate to get the input or to express the input that is needed. And what happens is the corporations get what they want. They get to bid the contracts, also I can say the defense contractors, those are corporations also. They get the no bid contractors where they get to bid what they want, charge what they want, and they get it. And the military budget is extremely high at the expense of the budget for the public, the budget for our betterment, you know, for our $15 an hour, for our health care, for these big issues that affect all of us. So that's where I see as an add-on to your other students, as what is a detriment to democracy. All right?
You make a very good point, and it has been made. The question is, how do we enact the changes that we need? Thank you so much for your call today and your input. Thank you all for your calls and input today. We've come to the end of the program, and just want to remind you to stay tuned for Dr. Peter Resnick's Toolbox. See, we're getting all kinds of toolboxes, political toolboxes, you have mechanical toolboxes, you have problem solving on the mind. So stay tuned for that program, and we will hook up again tomorrow. Thank you all for your very, very sharp and considered opinions today. Let's meet up again tomorrow. Bye-bye.